You are listening to You, Me, and an Album, episode 126. I'm Al Melchior.
I love how there's not really a traditional vocal chorus. Like, the vocals in that song, it's sort of what I would call more like a verse. And then you have this simple melody in the piano that sort of serves as a chorus, but it's like an instrumental. That little line that keeps coming back, it feels so good, and I could listen to it forever.
That was Beth Bambara talking about His Golden Messenger's 2019 album, Terms of Surrender. Beth is a St. Louis-based singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer who has released 5 albums, and her 6th album, It All Goes Up, will be released on August 4th. Beth, I really appreciate you taking some time out to come here and chat with me about an album that you love and introduce me to it. And just thank you so much for being here, and welcome to You, Me, and an Album.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm really glad that you made the time. I'm looking forward to talking about this album. And I mean, when I said in the intro, you're introducing me to the album, that's usually the case on this show. It's an opportunity for me to catch up on music I've never heard, and maybe, hopefully, at least some of the audience to do the same. But His Golden Messenger is one of those artists that I've heard about, read about a lot, don't know any of the music, though. So this truly is an introduction for me.
I was very
psyched with your selection. Were there, before I get into His Golden Messenger and this album, one thing that I read about your album that's going to be out in just days now is that it coincides with your 40th birthday. Was that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. And I was sort of like hesitant about putting that out there, but you know,
And I'm putting it out there even more. So.
Hey, you know what? I decided that at some point in life, you just have to embrace it. So I'm embracing it. I think that this record is a good reason to embrace that. And I think for me, it's sort of, it's a great reminder of where I'm at and sort of the confidence that I've found producing and just working in music. So far in my life, I feel like I'm in the most sort of peaceful and confident place that I've been. So I think it's totally a celebration of that.
That's outstanding. I love that. we'll talk more about the album. Everything, the circumstances around it, and all that a little bit later on. But yeah, let's get to Terms of Surrender. And I'm interested in how you came to this album, whether this was an entry point to His Golden Messenger or you were already a fan and it was like one of those albums like, well, I'm already a fan, so I have to buy it the day it comes out, or is it something sort of in between?
Yeah, so for me, like I know he's released previous albums, and I think I had sort of listened to a few older ones in passing, but really, this is the one, so sort of as like a casual listener, when I sort of stumbled upon this one, it wasn't like I wasn't rushing out to buy it immediately when it came out. It was just sort of a slower discovery. And the first time I heard it, I think I was probably driving, probably to a show. And 'cause I tend to do that sometimes. But yeah, something about like, when I'm driving, if it's like a longer road trip, this sort of music that it's a good driving record, I would say for me, not that it's necessarily upbeat, but, there is some upbeat elements or driving elements to it with the rhythm and stuff, but, just the sonic nature of it, just I connected with it when I was driving, and that really pulled me in, just the vibe, the overall vibe. But yeah, so that's when I started digging into it more.
So I want to ask you more about that experience of hearing it in the car, because I had some thoughts about my own experience with that. But before we do, I also just want to kind of get the for myself, the awkwardness out of the way of, I didn't know even, you know, just before referring to His Golden Messenger, should I be saying them or him? Because it seems like it's really, it's MC Taylor, it's his project. And I'm not familiar enough with the band to know how much consistency there is with the other musicians. So I'm sort of tempted to just from here forward, just say him, but would that be incorrect?
I don't think so. I think it is sort of his main, he's the driver of the project. So I think it's probably appropriate to say him, because it's sort of his thing. But, you know, yeah, there is a band involved.
Yeah. So, well, it's always an awkward thing, at least for me, to just figure out what to call, and I'll say the artist and kind of weasel my way out of it that way. But I want to ask you about the experience listening in the car, because I first listened to this album in the car, which is pretty common.
Okay.
I live in a place where I have to drive like 15 minutes to go pretty much anywhere. And so I do a certain amount of listening in the car, usually the first listens. And I didn't dislike it. I didn't think it was a bad car album, but for me, the album really came alive after I came home,
mm-hmm.
listened to it on headphones and then listened to it on speakers at home, much more so than listening in the car. So what is it for you of that experience of listening to it in the car in motion that makes it come alive for you?
Yeah, I think, man, just something about being in motion connects me with art, with music. And I don't know, it's the same thing. Like when I'm like that sort of can also feed me to write, like give me ideas. So something about just, I don't know what it is specifically, but being in motion is inspiring to me and it helps me connect to music, in a different way than when I'm just sitting. But I mean, listening in the car, you don't have, generally speaking, as good of a audio experience listening. Whereas like if you're in your specific listening space and you have really good speakers and you can focus. So it is a different experience, I think. But for me, yeah, it was while being in motion, while driving, it was the vibe of the music is what started to draw me in. And I didn't even really pay attention to any of the lyrics until later. So for me, it's an interesting thing having music itself communicate. This is for me, you know, I feel like the music itself communicates something to me just as much as the lyrics might.
Yeah, for me, it's usually even more so. But for me, it's this distinction between different places where you listen to an album. For some albums and for some episodes of this podcast, it matters. And for others, it really doesn't. Like the album is just the same, you know, or a similar experience in different places. But this one, that was not the case at all. And part of it was, so you're talking about the vibe of the album, which definitely comes through no matter where I listen to it. But also just the way it was put together. Like once I put the headphones on, I was like, there's just all kinds of cool stuff in terms of how certain songs were put together that impressed me so much. But the other part was the lyrics. And I had to sit in front of my laptop, pull up Genius Lyrics. I could not understand the lyrics for almost any of the songs, but it made a huge difference when I knew what the lyrics were.
Yeah, that's what the one thing that I sort of wanted to touch on, and I'm glad you just brought it up, is that almost like my first few listens through this record, it was as if the voice, yes, it's carrying the melody, right? But it also was sort of acting as like another rhythmic element in the song. Did this fade for you? Is it busted beyond the thing? And if we don't save it, does it vanish in the thing? I think one thing I like about MC's, well, I'll just call him MC, Michael's, it sounds cool, MC's vocal phrasing is that it's just pretty unique in that it's really rhythmic. And that also, like, Yeah, it's interesting because I had a similar experience. I couldn't really, I was like, I'm not exactly sure what words are coming out right now, but like the rhythm and the melody is so good. And then you're right, when I started looking up some of the lyrics, I was like, oh, okay, this is making more sense. It's now, this is more of a complete artistic picture, right?
Yeah. Were there particular songs? Because I'll say for me, there were particular songs. I'm thinking of one in particular where it's, I was really glad to know what the lyrics were because it totally changed my experience of the song. But were there any that you can remember like that where
yeah,
hearing the words changed it completely?
I think Cat's Eye Blue was one for me. That sort of, it's very poetic. Sort of just very relational to people and this sort of like, oh, what? Yeah, the lyric, let the light of the moon open your eyes, cat's eye, blue sky, let go. Let the light of the moon open your eyes. That, yeah, that's really poetic.
Ready to take your soul, cat's eye, blue sky, let go. Let the light of the moon open your eyes.
So being able to hear that and put that together with the vibe of the song, I think, yeah, really opened it up.
Yeah. Well, I could have had that, again, once I knew what the lyrics were, I could have had that reaction with probably any song on the album. Like, he's a great lyricist. But the one that really, where hearing the lyrics really just made such a difference for me was Happy Birthday, Baby. Because it's such a sweet song.
Yeah.
And I thank Genius Lyrics for this because it was clearly about somebody close to him, Ione. Because it's the second song where that name is referenced. Well, it's his daughter.
Yeah.
So, at least that's what it says on Genius Lyrics. So I'm taking them at their word. But yeah, just a really, really sweet, beautiful song.
Was a lonely number two. You were born under three. It was lightning quick. You lit up the highs like a matchstick. Four, child, you're a wonder. Help me die when the world went under. Five, sweet, I'm only gonna tell you I love you.
Yeah, you can't hear the story behind it when you can't really hear what he's saying right off the bat.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is a sweet story. Cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. So, I'm going to do something that I do a lot and I annoy myself, so hopefully I don't annoy the listeners with this too much. But again, because the premise of the show is that I'm trying to broaden my own musical horizons, that I often reference the same bands over and over again because I'm making comparisons with music that I already know.
Mm-hmm.
And are you familiar with the last couple of Talk Talk albums?
I am not, no.
Okay. Because I listened to this album, and from the fourth track forward, I just could not escape thinking that MC Taylor was really, really influenced by those albums. Because there's just sonic elements that are like right out of particularly the album Spirit of Eden. It's crazy. The harmonica sound. And even if you're not familiar with those albums, I mean... And in fact, it's sort of helpful to me to know, okay, is this the narrowness of my perspective that I keep relating things to the same bands, the same albums, or is this really kind of a unique thing? So like, for example, Old Enough to Wonder Why, this is the first track, first of several, where there's a harmonica with like a very kind of screechy quality. Have you heard that anyplace else? Because the only other place where I've heard a harmonica that sounds like that is on Talk Talk albums.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a very specific, distinctly affected harmonica sound. It's a harmonica, but you hear it and right away you don't think that's a harmonica, but then it's sort of like, oh, that's what that instrument is. And it's got all of this sort of like distorted, but like verbed out sort of effects. And I know, I feel like I have heard that. I haven't heard it very often. So yeah, it's interesting that you noticed that. And I also love that. So now you've given me something new to listen to. And I love
cool.
that.
That's awesome. Well, and I mean, I would have made that connection no matter what, but I've also done a couple episodes. Over the course of the show, I've done 3 episodes that relate in one way or another to that album. So it's really a big, big album for me. And it's been kind of a recurring theme on this show.
Oh, cool.
But that track came up and I'm just going through my notes. And so, you know, for Old Enough to Wonder Why, harmonica, which was played by Phil Cook, apparently in the credits that I saw. Sounds mm-hmm. like it does on Spirit of Eden. Then the song you mentioned, Cat's Eye Blue. Mm-hmm. Drum sound also sounds like Talk Talk.
Oh, cool.
Down at the Uptown, more of that screechy talk talk harmonica.
Uh-huh.
And then the song Whip, which is probably my favorite song on the album.
Oh, yeah.
Not just, again, my comment for it. All of it sounds like talk talk. The harmonica, the drums, the guitar, the organ. It'd be interesting for you not being familiar to maybe hear that track and then play that album and notice the similarities. But that's another track too, where like once I heard the words, knew what the words were, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. Cause just the whole idea of, you know, he's tired of the whip and he's pursuing this spiritual thing. And it's,
yeah,
I loved it. So it's spirit of a war.
It's so relatable on a basic human level, and it's I'm glad you thought so too.
Yeah, so well, I feel like I don't usually like to quite talk so early in the podcast about my responses to things, but I really did like this album a lot. So I'm kind of excited about it, but I want to know more about, you've talked about one or two of the tracks already, but you know, what are some things about this album that make it really special to you, special enough that you chose it out of all the albums you could have chosen for this episode? You picked this one. So what are, you know, some of the things that get you excited about talking about this album?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's hard to pick favorites. I'm sure your other guests on the show have a similar sentiment, but it's especially hard for me to pick favorites. So sort of, I was just thinking about like my past. Well, when did this come out? 2019, I think.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's really, I think I've connected with it in the past few years in particular, just on a level of like sort of me expanding the own sort of music that I'm making. So like I was really drawn and inspired by the textures in this record and the production, because it's very subtle yet beautiful. And just the interplay even between, I'm trying to think of what song it might be, My Wing or Old Enough to Wonder Why. But it's just this really simple acoustic guitar, and it's not super fancy, but the interplay between these two acoustic guitars and is just really beautiful, because it's simple yet it's melodic. That that's sort of something, that simplicity and that sort of instrumental space was something that really inspired me. And it's definitely something that I intentionally wanted to explore more for my own music. So I think for me, if that sort of answers your question, it just inspired me musically to keep exploring what I'm doing. And at a time where, you know, this is my sixth record, debatable, but yes. yeah, record that I'm actually like putting out there as a piece of art, a cohesive work. I'm always looking to, you know, explore what I'm doing. And so this for me was just inspiring in a very, in a musical way, a production wise. Yeah.
So it was just like the particular blend of instruments, or as you said, the fact that it was like not so fancy, like what were some really particular things where you thought, I want to try that out or try my equivalent of it?
Yeah. Well, like, so the second, I think it's the second track, Bright Direction. I love how there's not really a traditional vocal chorus. Like, the vocals in that song, it's sort of what I would call more like, a verse. And then you have, this simple melody in the piano that sort of serves as a chorus, but it's like an instrumental, that little line that keeps coming back. It feels so good, and I could listen to it forever.
It's totally a hook, right?
Yeah, like, it's a great hook, but it's so simple. And so that's one of the things that I thought to myself after listening. And it's like, I didn't even realize it until I went back to actually, you know, analyze the song a little bit. Because I don't do that a ton with music. I like to just listen to it. I let it sort of affect me. And then, but I'm not like always going back to songs and picking apart like what's going on here necessarily. So it wasn't until a bit later on that I was sort of saying, hey, what's happening in this song actually? And I was floored to be like, oh, I want to keep listening to this song because it's got this really little catchy instrumental hook. And I think that's so cool. Yeah, so that's one little thing that sort of I held on to and wanted to, you know, incorporate into my own songs.
So you were just saying how you don't really get into analysis mode, at least not right away.
Yeah.
And so that made me think back to hearing that song the first couple of times and hearing that piano line. And yeah, it's just... that to me, it makes the song, and it's not super prominent, but it's just something about where it sits in that song that makes it, you know, kind of an addictive song to go back and listen to. Like, kind of gave me goosebumps actually. So like when you talk about that, you just are in the moment and in the experience of listening to the songs, like what was the experience of listening to, and I don't want to keep saying that song, so to Bright Direction. I'm still not great with all these titles.
Yeah.
So listening to Bright Direction, you know, what, I mean, was it a certain type of experience just listening to it?
I think it sort of put me, so I connect with music at like, it's definitely an emotional thing. And this Bright Direction sort of put me in this, what I would call like, contemplative, reflective mode, but also like positive. I don't know. So that's where I went when I first heard it. And I love that.
Yeah. I want to go back to another song on here. Cause yeah, some songs hit me more than others. Just like I was saying, how once I knew the lyrics, that some of the songs hit me differently, or putting mm-hmm. headphones on. But there are also certain songs that just, you know, right away really, you know, just really made an impact. And the one for sure on the first listen was My Wing. And I just wrote Beautiful Chorus. Like, I just was sort of at a loss for words otherwise, of like, what is it about this song? But even before knowing what the lyrics were, like, it was just very emotional for me.
Yeah, I would say that, this record is definitely has that emotional quality that's drawn me in. So I'm glad that you're experiencing that too.
Yeah. Now, how familiar are you with the rest of his catalog? Because I didn't really have time to explore, and I wondered if this was, you know, typical or consistent, or if this is some sort of departure.
Well, so I haven't been very familiar with his back catalog, but one interesting thing I found was a live recording. And those, like, when you revisit, when you can go back and find somebody's live recordings, you know, interpreting a song live is way different than a studio record. And so I sort of was like looking for common threads, and, you know, they're the same songs, but I found that in digging back to older records, what's one of them here? I'm really also bad with titles. I am a melody person, so I remember melodies and words not so much. Like, I can see album covers, and I'm like, boy, what's mm-hmm. the name of that? I can see the picture in my head. Hallelujah, anyhow. That came out, that was the 2017, I think. Okay. But even some older, yeah, Hallelujah, anyhow, that's the one I'm thinking of. But there's songs on that record that I listen to, and then to hear them sort of evolve on a live recording is really cool. Yes, will you come and see me? If it's all the same. Yes, fading like roses. I've got so much love. Yeah, so I've been excited about digging into his older material, but hearing like what it sounds like when they're playing it live now.
Yeah. Now, you found some old, you know, or videos or recordings. Have you actually seen His Gold Messenger live?
So it's on my bucket list. I have not had an opportunity yet to see them live, but I am very much looking forward to the day when that will happen.
Now, there's a new album coming out, a tour, but is that going to conflict with your own tour and your own plans, or is that maybe an opportunity to go see them?
Oh yeah, well, it's unfortunate because I do miss a lot of shows that come through sort of where I live, because I am also gigging. And so I'm not sure. There also have been times where I've been on the road and I've had an off night, and I've just looked up and I've been, oh, this band is playing tonight and I'm here and I actually can go see it. So, you know, sometimes the stars align like that. But yeah, I'm hoping in this next year, I'll be able to see them live. But one aside, like another artist that I've been fortunate to see, because I got to play on a festival with them, but I'd always wanted, I've only seen them once before, but Jason Isbell, if you're familiar with him, I actually got to play on a festival that he was playing. So that's a great way to see a bunch of bands that you want to see, is if you're also playing on a festival with them. So
that's awesome.
So that's my, maybe that will happen. Maybe I'll get to play a festival with His Golden Messenger.
Yeah. How cool would that be?
That would be amazing.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, in a short time, we've actually gotten to a lot of this album, but the one track that we haven't talked about at all is The Teacher, or I'm sorry, I Need a Teacher.
Yeah.
Which is the leadoff track.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it really feels like a leadoff track, right? It's like this, you know, kind of big sounding song, which
yeah.
I think is very much at odds with the rest of the album. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm wondering what your experience is with that, because to me, it does feel like kind of a really important song on the album. And, you know, not only it leads it off, but it feels like an important song.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait, what do you mean when you say it feels it's big? You mean in the sound or the idea of the song?
I'd say more in the sound, because yeah. there's a lot of, you know, actually, I don't know. I was going to say there's a lot of big ideas on this album. I don't know if that's the way I would put it. There's just a lot of really well-stated ideas. There's a lot of deep, deep ideas, I think, on this album. But yeah, that album, or that song rather, I Need a Teacher, just feels very grand musically.
Rock me, daddy, I'm still a kid. The ways to you are also very different. Beauty in the broken American mind.
Yeah, yeah, I, that's definitely it. And it being the first track, you know, that is something that pulled me in, and I sort of expected more like that in the record, but it's the rest of the record is more, a little more subtle than that. Which I also loved.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had very much the same reaction. And I, not only in noticing it, but kind of digging that, you know, once I got to the second track, the third track, and hearing the subtleties, and that it wasn't all just this, you know, really big sound. That was kind of cool. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, anything else about the album that has been left unsaid up to this point?
Ooh. Did we talk about sort of another thing that drew me into not necessarily this record in particular, but His Golden Messenger, was just I feel like Michael has a unique quality to his voice.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that at all.
Yeah, and I find, like, you know, I think I'm drawn to non-traditional voices, voices that you wouldn't necessarily say, you know, this voice is going to be on American Idol or whatever, you know. I think I'm drawn to things that are outside of that. So that's another thing with this record. A big thing that pulled me in was just his voice. MC's voice, the sort of distinct quality of it, and the way that he phrases his words. That again, I said it already, but it's very rhythmic, and it sort of works in this cool way.
Yeah, so that's interesting to me that was a big draw, because for me it was sort of an obstacle that I had to get past, because mm-hmm. I like singers who have distinctive voices, who sometimes are, you know, they're kind of good bad voices, you know,
mm-hmm.
like they're not necessarily the perfect voices, but there's a quality and a character there, and that definitely is true for MC. But I think partly because it was so hard for me to make out what he was saying, and it's a little bit high pitched.
Yeah.
And so there was something about it that, like, it was a little bit too much out of what I normally listen to.
Yeah, I get that for sure. It sort of similar for me, but I think the fact that I sort of had to work for it, I was like, I can barely make out what you're saying. And like, you would think that that's a bad thing, right? But just really like having to put in the extra effort, I was like, okay, you know, I do like this voice, and I like how he uses it as an instrument. And but I definitely get what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I don't want to overstate it because, you know, I've come around, and so, you know, mm-hmm. Probably at the fourth listen, yeah, I was there. But like the first listen, it was kind of something that, again, I had to kind of work to get over.
Yeah.
And then it was the other things that we've talked about, like mm-hmm. the way it was produced and arranged, mm-hmm. And all the kind of cool little Easter eggs, you know, that got me intrigued. And then kind of along the way, it's like, oh, okay. And then and learning the lyrics was, yeah, I think, important too. So that once all that was in place, the vocals didn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I could appreciate the character because it is, he does have a different quality to his voice than you would hear, you know, whether it's an Americana or folk or rock or, you know, any other genre. Like I don't know who you would even compare him to.
Yeah. That's interesting. What you just said about all of the parts. And that just made me think of, experiencing music as, you know, the sum of the parts, because you could throw a different singer on the song and it's not going to feel the same. And so the interesting thing to me and what I love about making records and listening to other records is those little pieces. The piece on its own doesn't really matter. What matters is how it fits in with the other pieces. How do these instruments all fit together? It doesn't matter. You know, you might listen to that harmonica we were talking about earlier,
yeah,
and on its own, that probably sounds terrible. And you're like, ew, why would I want to listen to this, right? But you drop it in to this song and it just, that piece sort of creates this vibe and creates this, painting.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you know, when I was saying that all of those other things came into place, I wasn't really thinking about it in the way that you just articulated it, but that's absolutely right. And as you were talking through that, it reminded me of the sort of debate that was online maybe a month or so ago about Meg White, because I think somebody had written or said something about her not being a good drummer or something. But then all these people came to her defense and said, well, she was the perfect drummer for the White Stripes.
Yes.
You know, and it's, yeah, not about, you know, whether somebody wins the drumming Olympics and, you know, can do all the fanciest things, but it's like, how do they sit with everything else musically there? And yeah, you're right. Like a different singer on this album could probably ruin it.
It would make it different for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but very, very cool. Well, you know, you've made some allusions to how this album has affected your own writing and playing. So was that the case for your new album that's coming out? You know, are there specific songs that you can point to and say, hey, you know, here's where, you know, I might have done it differently if I hadn't heard this album?
Yeah, I think in general, if I first talk about that in general terms, mm-hmm. there... So, in the songs on this record, there is more instrumental space, and that is a direct sort of influence from listening to his Golden Messenger's Terms of Surrender. That was something that really inspired me, and I was leaning into. So specifically, the song Lonely Walls, there is some fair instrumental space in that song. And normally I would say, oh, I should write some lyrics and put more lyrics in here. And so I sort of, decided to take away lyrics and, just use the music to communicate.
It's not the same.
I've been trying to hang on, wondering how it grew so strong through the darkest years.
Wow, that's really cool. Well, let's talk about the album just just in general. So this was, and I mean, this comes up a lot, obviously, because it's 2023. But I mean, this album was affected by COVID, as I understand it. So what was the timing of writing the songs for the album, getting, you know, to record it, and how was it impacted by, you know, everything that's gone on the last few years?
So this record has been like rolling around in my head for a long time, and it was hard to get it out, in the sense that I had gone through some band member changes, and so finding new members to play with and take in the studio with me, it took some time to sort of figure that out. And we tried some remote recording, which on one song, the song Moment, Sam Gregg is playing guitar on there, and he is one of my former bandmates who moved away, and we sort of experimented with recording remotely and sending tracks back and forth, and it worked, but I sort of really needed to be in the same room with other musicians to work some of the songs out. And mm-hmm. Otherwise, I had realized, I got to a point where I said, you know what, I could make a record with musicians remotely, but it might take 5 years. I don't know. Like, and these ideas and these melodies have been already sitting around in my head for, you know, at least a good year. And I really just need to get them out, and I need to go in the studio and get a record finished just for my own. You know, I make music for, of course, for listeners, but, you know, I also make it for me. And so getting it out there was a process. But I want to say, from the time we went into the studio, well, we went in say like March or something like that, and did our first session. So I had enough songs, like 4 songs, that we tracked the basic drums, bass guitar, and rhythm guitar. And once I got those 4 songs, it's sort of like, okay, I got these 4 songs finished, and now I'm going to try to finish tying up the loose ends on the other songs so then we can take them in the studio. And that took me a little while, but in doing that, was when I connected with Black Mesa Records, and they really loved my past album Evergreen and said, hey, we would love to put out your new record. And I said, well, it doesn't really exist yet, so you'd be kind of taking a gamble, but they said, oh no, I'm sure we're sure it's going to be great. So
wow.
So then awesome. Hooking up with them, sort of having another person on board that was invested in some way, was sort of like cheering and saying, yeah, we want to get behind this, was sort of the motivation I needed to get the rest of the record finished. And unfortunately, I would think I'd be self-motivated enough to get a record finished, but sometimes it's nice to have some support and some other motivation. Outside motivation is always good for me creatively, which is, it's interesting, but I've learned that for myself, and that's how I work, and I'm leaning into it. So.
Oh, that's really cool. And I imagine it's, and especially the last few years more so maybe than before, I imagine it's kind of a lonely process. So yeah, to have that outside support from the label, I can imagine that must have been just really critical.
Yeah, I mean, and after putting out records on my own, it's difficult. It's difficult to stay motivated and to stay motivated and to remember why you're doing what you're doing. And you know, I have to make music. If I was making it and nobody else was hearing it, I would be fine with that. It's just something that's a part of me and that I feel driven to do, and that's fulfilling. And but having outside support, especially when I do feel like I want to get these songs out to people, has been really key.
So you've been in St. Louis for a good while, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about the support from the label. How about the scene there in St. Louis? I mean, you know, was there mutual support the last few years and people, you know, helping each other get their work out and playing it in front of people?
Yeah, I think so. St. Louis to me has been a pretty supportive of the arts in general. There is a regional arts commission that helps connect artists with grants for projects. And there's like someone I know who was doing a music video series, a live sort of stripped down recording session that they were doing featuring only local artists, and getting that avenue for people to find out what other songwriters are doing in town. And they were able to do that with a grant from the Arts Commission. So it seems like there's a lot of people wanting to support and in that way. And there's a lot of venues to play in, and a lot of musical collaboration goes on in the town. So it's been really good.
It's excellent to hear. And as I've mentioned, your album will be out soon if people are listening to this podcast, even right when it comes out. August 4th is the release date for It All Goes Up. But you're not doing an album release show until 2 weeks after. So the date for that is August 18th at the Old Rock House in St. Louis. So if anybody's within driving distance, they need to mark their calendars for that August 18th. Was there, you know, any particular, you know, reason behind the choice of the venue or the date or anything like that? Or just, you know, just how things kind of fell?
Yeah, just kind of how things fell. And we are on the road actually when the record comes out. So we'll be in Appleton, Wisconsin at Mile of Music Festival the day the record comes out. And we have a few shows in Wisconsin that weekend. And then we're up in Michigan before that. So we are playing some shows before and when the record comes out. And then we'll also be in Chicago on August 19th. August 18th at the Old Rock House. I'm super excited.
Excellent. And so you mentioned those dates, you know, sort of all in the Midwest. In fact, you know, when I pull you up on YouTube, and you, like, I'm sure you've seen this when you pull up a band on YouTube and it says, you know, nearest date where they're coming in, it's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, well, I'm in Massachusetts, so that's not a big help for me. So I at some point, are you going to go east or west or south for that matter?
Yeah, I think I'm sort of I'm tired right now. from all the, like, getting a record ready to put out is a lot of work. And so we do have some Midwest shows planned, but I'm sort of waiting to rest up a little bit in this next spring, hopefully get out to both coasts and just sort of touring for right now for me is a little more of a logistical challenge, but it's not to say that I'm not excited about getting out there, because I really am. And I know that, this next year will bring more shows on the road for sure.
Well, you know, you're talking about being tired of, you know, with everything that goes on around the making release of an album. Kind of takes me to my last question, which is a question I usually feel really silly asking, but then I usually get really good answers to it, which is, so you've made an album, you have these tour plans. Is there anything else that you have, you know, coming up that people should know about? Because again, it's not like you don't have a lot already going on. And yet when I ask that, usually it's like, oh yeah, and there's these four other things. So I just want to make sure we don't miss anything here. Is there anything else coming on, coming up that people should know about?
Yeah. Other than just sort of some Midwestern shows, I think I'm probably forgetting, but you know, I try to write it all down in my calendar. But no, the one exciting thing for me is we're working on a couple music videos, and that's another fun part of the creative process for me. I don't make the videos, but what I like is the collaboration, getting together with somebody who has an idea or a vision, or they listen to the song and it makes them think like, oh, we should do this with a video. So just getting more creative people involved in other creative disciplines is really exciting for me. And so we teamed up with a video director who we've worked with before on some videos for the last record. And it was just so much fun to collaborate with him. So we're doing that again. So those videos should be coming out. One probably in a few weeks, and another one will be a little bit longer. But yeah, so that's something people can watch out for.
Excellent. Okay. So yeah, there's always more, it seems. Lots of stuff to look forward to from you, Beth. So, and I always like to give people all the information on where they can keep up with you. And so I do see that you're on Twitter/X. Today, as we're recording, is the day that they're apparently rebranding. So when you're listening to this, I don't know what that platform is actually called, but whatever it is on that platform, on Threads and Instagram, you're available at Beth Bambara, and then BethBambara.com. And then you've got your Patreon, the Bomb Squad. This is really cool. So patreon.com/BethBambara. And anything else that I have missed, or things that people should know about those places to reach you?
No, I think that's the main roundup. You got it.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. Well, on that note, then, I will let you all know where you can keep up with me and with the show. I am on the Twitter thing, whatever it is, at AlMelchiorBB. And then the show is also there, as well as on Instagram and Threads at YumiAlbum. And then there is the Substack newsletter, and that's YumiAlbum.substack.com. So, Beth, thank you so much for, again, taking the time out, introducing me to a cool album and giving me even more insight in the process of talking about it here. So I've really enjoyed this, and thanks so much.
Oh, yeah. I've had a blast chatting with you, Al. Thank you.
That's awesome, Beth. So, yeah, do check out Beth's new album, which will be out in just days. And check out this album by His Golden Messenger if you have not already. So that's going to be a wrap for this show. But I will be back again in another week with another guest talking about yet another album. So until then, everybody, please do take care. Be careful out there. And, of course, listen to some great music.